You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound. A dimension of sight. A dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
What is happening?
It's all I don't know.
You're listening to the AME Radio Show.
Mike, guess what time it is? Well, you know what time it is? It is 6 a.m. and you're listening to the AME Radio Show, the show that is the voice of artists and entertainers everywhere. I'm your host, Jason Dowd. We got a great show for you guys today, and I hope that you'll be able to just listen to what we have, the people that we have coming on. You'll see new things that you didn't know existed, and you'll learn about them as well. And I hope that their story inspires you to get out there and try new things. Remember, sometimes the fact that we don't do something is because that we're afraid, or we don't think that we can do it. But when you hear people that have walked the walk and talked the talk do it, you can do the same thing yourself. Sometimes you just need that little push, and that's what we're here for, because we want to get you trying new things and experiencing life the way it should be experienced. So, before we get into anything, check out our websites, www.theamemagazine.com. And while you're there, you'll be able to see all the links to our social media networks. So like us, follow us, whatever the terminology is, please do that as well. You can download our apps for our Apple and Android platforms. And of course, you'll be able to see anything that we have posted on the AME Magazine, radio, or television. So if you miss something or something coming up, check it out there when you get the chance. Don't do it now because you're probably driving, and that would be bad. We do not want any accidents, people. Okay, so today we have a couple of great guests coming on, and I'm really excited to talk to them. We have Christine Conrad. She is a screenwriter who wrote a lot of the shows that you see on Lifetime and a lot of other networks, but now she's actually the writer of Zombie at 17, who we featured out a couple weeks ago. And she has got a great outlook on life. She is full of energy. She loves what she does, and I know you're going to love to see her work, and of course, I know she's going to inspire you. Then we have Jeff Allen coming up. He's a comedian. He is extremely funny. We're going to be talking to him about his career, and we're going to get him to talk to tell some jokes. You know why? Because there's nothing better in this life than laughter. And I tell you what, it is better than medicine. It's amazing what a simple laugh can do to somebody. Comedy is amazing, and we embrace that here at the AME Radio Show. So we got them coming up here in just a few minutes. I don't really want to talk too much about a lot of things because I know we're going to be going into some deep interviews here. But one of the things I do want to talk about really quick, and that's bullying. And the reason I say this is because I've been bullied the last couple weeks, believe it or not. And I didn't realize that anybody was capable of doing what they just did to me. But these bullies were very upset that I'm going to be having a specific guest coming up in the next couple weeks, and they really want to shut me down. And they want to make my life hard. Well, they tried. But you know what? I don't give in to bullies, and I don't give in to people trying to silence me. I don't care if you agree with anybody that I have on my show or not. I don't care if you agree with their political platforms or religious beliefs, whatever it may be. You can't silence me, and you can't keep me from putting these people on, and I refuse to let that happen. If you silence somebody because of the fact that you don't like what they say, it's called fascism. And we're all against that here. In America, you have the right to say whatever it is that you want to say without being attacked. But there are some downfalls to that. You may lose your fan base, whatever it may be. But no matter what it is, even if it's the most bigoted thing you've ever heard in your life, you have the right to say that, and you have the right to not be attacked for doing so. Well, they're deciding to do that, and I think that hiding behind the wall of an iron curtain of the internet in order to attack somebody is ridiculous. Now, what I found out today was I went on and to do my show here, and I was going to see who was coming on today. And I found out that they wiped my entire calendar out. So I almost didn't realize who was coming on, but I did find it because they have a neat little restore button in my calendar. So luckily I got that, but my site was hacked, my email was hacked, and we're back on track now, and I know who did it. So we're going to be putting a stop to that. But if you are a bully, I know what it's like to be bullied. I've been bullied my entire life. And I don't take kindly to that. And, you know, you can attack me all you want, but you're not going to get me. And I'm not going to sit there and reply to these people either. But I do know that if you're going to hide behind the sheet, the iron curtain of the internet, you are a coward. You are an absolute coward because of the fact that it allows you to anonymously put out whatever you want to say and hurt somebody. That's no different than walking up to somebody when their back is turned to you and just driving a knife in. You know, that's unsportsmanlike, and it's terrible. So anyways, that's what I've been dealing with, and we're going to get over this, and we're going to take these people down. And I'll tell you who that is coming up in just a little bit. But what I want to do now is I want to take a quick commercial break, and then I want to come back and I want to talk about good things. We're going to be talking to our guest. We have Christine Conrad, who's sitting on the line waiting for us, so we'll be right back after this. Don't go anywhere. You're going to love what she has to say.
I'm Gladdy, the dachshund, the face of Gladdy's Goodies. Are you worried about your pet's health? My parents were too, especially since I developed pancreatitis. They couldn't find any treats I could eat, so they made some. Our natural treats are healthy for all dogs, with and without health issues. We have lots of delicious flavors like chicken, turkey, salmon, sweet potato, beef, and more. With our homemade treats, you won't worry about the contents because they have no chemicals, fillers, or bad ingredients. Go to GladdysGoodies.com now to get your fur friend a bag. And pick them up some swag while you're there. You'll be glad you did. Remember, we have the treats and swag to make their tails wag. Again, that's GladdysGoodies.com. Again, that's GladdysGoodies.com.
Hey guys, it's Lily Mae Silverstein playing Penny in my new movie, Alex and Me, which will come out digitally on June 19th, so go check it out.
Hey everybody, this is John Schneider. You know, Dukes of Hazzard, Smallville, haves and have-nots. Anyway, you are listening to a great show, the AME Radio Show. I love it, I love it.
Well, our hearts be like thunder. I don't know why they don't explode. You got your hands in my back pockets and Sam Cooke singing on the radio.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. I have on the line with me a very special guest. Her name is Christine Conrad, and she is a screenwriter who has made some pretty amazing titles over the years and stuff that you've enjoyed. You've seen it on Lifetime and so much more. Her most recent thing that we've seen on Lifetime has been Zombies at 17, and she's got a lot more stuff in the works, so we're excited to talk to her about that. So welcome, Christine, to the show. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. You know,
great, thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. I love screenwriters, and because you know what? I've tried it myself, and you know, I have that writer's block. I know what I want to say, but I can't get it on paper, and you're actually putting it on paper and making some amazing things, some amazing shows that we've all loved to see. So I guess let's kind of get to know you a little bit and see how you do that. So why did you want to become a screenwriter?
Well, I actually didn't initially. I'm from Nebraska originally, and back when I was growing up there, you know, there was no film school in Nebraska. There were no film classes. There was no industry there, and so I was going to be a prosecutor. But I had won a lot of writing awards in high school, and when I got the brochure from the University of Southern California that listed screenwriting as a major, I was hooked instantly. I said, this is what I want to do. I completely changed my mind. And of course, my parents were very excited. I wanted to go to film school instead of law school. But they were very supportive, and I applied and got in.
That's cool. Now, yeah. You know, what I have found out, cause I did a lot of writing myself when I was a kid and stuff like that, that screenwriting is completely different from regular writing. Did you find that out the hard way when you first started, or did it just kind of come naturally to you?
Yeah, it is a lot different. I found it out the hard way, I guess. By the time I got into film school, I had never even read a screenplay. and, of course, not written one. And so that structure, and not just the formatting. When everyone thinks of a screenplay, they think of, you know, the formatting, the fade-in and the fade-outs and the cut-tos and all of that. And it's really so much more than that. It's being able to tell a story so much more efficiently and to tell it in a way that's completely visual, because you don't have the luxury of getting inside the characters' heads like you do in prose. So I had kind of retrained my brain to work that way, I guess, and write that way. And it wasn't until about 2 years ago that I actually, when I got the deal with HarperCollins to do the three novels, that I actually went back and started writing prose again. And it just reminded me how much different that whole process is. I kept getting notes from my agent saying, you've got to expand more. You've got to describe more. You just get to the chase way too quickly. And I'm like, that's because I've been writing screenplays for so long. But yeah, it's a lot different.
Now, I know a lot of people that are extremely talented, and they go after their dreams, and they realize that, you know, it is tough, and sometimes something happens really hard, and it completely derails them. When you went into this, obviously realizing that, you know, it's not like writing, were you derailed at all? Did you second guess yourself, or did you just decide, I'm gonna make the best of this and just push through it? And what were some of the hardest things that you had to do to overcome a recession on your passion to do it, if you have it?
You know, I don't think it was that way. I think I was excited to learn something new, and mm-hmm. I'd always loved movies, and I love the way that the screenplay is truly a blueprint for a movie. You know, when you're writing a novel, you're writing prose, it's all about you. You know, you sit there in front of a blank page, and you are creating the world completely. And when you are writing a screenplay, you're creating a blueprint that you're going to hand off to a bunch of other people to build into a movie. And so I actually really liked that collaborative aspect of it. And I liked all the parameters. I looked at them, I guess, as challenges, not really as obstacles. So I wasn't ever derailed. I think I was pretty enthusiastic the whole time. And once I started reading screenplays and watching the movies and seeing the differences and seeing how those come to life, I think I was even more excited than before.
Now, some movie had to catch your eye when you were younger and make you wanted to try this, or maybe had inspired you even down the line that maybe I want to do something like this because that was so well written or so well done. What were some of those movies that inspired you?
Oh my gosh, there are so many. I loved Stand By Me. I think that was one of my favorite movies as a kid. I've probably seen it like 50 times. I was a big Stephen King fan, and of course that was a movie that was an adaptation of one of his short stories in Four Seasons, and it was a great book, and I thought an even better movie, and I loved it, and it was a coming-of-age movie, and so I think I really gravitated to that when I was younger. I loved The Lost Boys. I loved sort of the macabre vampire lore, and they had this, like, sexy grittiness to them, and so I really loved that movie. I'm trying to think other movies that I think those two were the ones I probably watched the most.
You know, it's funny you mentioned Stephen King. Did you ever have a chance to meet him?
No, I have not met him.
No? You know, I have a funny story. I'll do it really quick because I want to get into some other things. But I was sitting at this place in Bristol, Connecticut, where I was born and raised. And we were watching, like the New England Little League Championships and stuff. And I'm sitting down there, and I look over at this guy, and I'm like, he looks familiar. I'm just sitting there. And then all of a sudden, I look over, and I'm like, I know who you are. You're Stephen King. And he goes, yes, I am. And I'm like, wow, how would I have met him here? You know, I mean, out of all the places to meet him, that was the place I met him. But it was one of the coolest experiences I've ever had. And to be able to meet somebody like that was just phenomenal.
Oh, I'm sure. He's brilliant. And have you ever read his book on writing?
No. No, I've never read that one.
It's a great book. It's just kind of getting into his process and his mind is something that I think every writer should do because I think he's brilliant. So I think you'd enjoy the book, yeah. Especially if you like writing.
And you know, I like that you like the macabre and you kind of try to do something like that for The Zombie at 17, which is a really cool aspect towards of what I've seen on Lifetime. You know, it kind of sticks to the Lifetime, but yet it also goes off of it, and I like that. What was your inspiration behind writing the Zombie at 17?
Well, I'm a huge fan of zombie movies, and I have been for a long time. And so we had done this series, the At 17 series, that I did with producer Pierre David, and I think we have about 8 of those movies. They've done very well for Lifetime. And they're all about different characters at 17 with things happening to them, like missing at 17, dead at 17, betrayed at 17. So anyway, excuse me. He came up with the idea, or someone he talked to came up with the idea of, you guys should do zombie at 17. And when he pitched me that, I was like, oh my gosh, that's either going to be amazing or it's going to be like the death of this series. Because it's so off genre for what we were doing. But yet it's so fun too. And so I was really excited to write it, and that's how the whole movie came about.
You know, I was talking to some of the stars that were on this movie, and I was talking to the girl that played the girl that actually turns into a zombie. And
Celeste.
Celeste. And what was really cool about it, the way that she turned into a zombie, is that she gets scratched by a cat.
Yeah.
How did you come up with that idea? Because usually, you know, in typical zombie movies, they get bit by one of the undead or something happens to them like that. Why a cat?
Well, you know, it's funny. So actually in the movie, so it was written as a cat scratch. But then on set, I guess they changed it to a cat bite, which so in the, if you see the movie, it's she gets bit by the cat. But I love cats. I have 2 of them myself. And they're such creepy little things sometimes. They really are. And you can get this disease called cat scratch fever.
Yes.
Which I've never known anyone to actually get that, but you hear about it all the time. I feel like it's just this lore that, like, you teach little kids so they are careful not to get scratched by a cat. But so I thought, well, you know, if you can get that from a cat, why not make this zombie virus? And in the movie, we kind of treated it like a virus that you could get.
Mm-hmm.
Why not let it spread that way? It doesn't have to just spread through bites. So that's kind of that's where the idea came from.
You know, the funny thing is, because Celeste told me, you know, I need to talk to the director about that. And then you wrote me, and you're like, I wrote this thing. Like, yeah, I could finally ask the person behind it. That was really cool. you know, but now you actually know somebody that has had cat scratch fever, because I do get it. I'm extremely allergic to cats, and when I do get scratched, I get very sick. Not to the point of turning into a zombie, but I do get, well, I guess I could feel like I'm a zombie. So, I mean, I guess it's the same way, but I get a horrendous fever and aches and pains, kind of like the flu. So
do you have to have an allergy in order to be susceptible to cat scratch fever? I thought it was cat scratch fever was just like because they get dirt and stuff under their nails that it will get into your bloodstream.
I don't know if it's if you have to have an allergy for it or not, but I know that I am extremely allergic to cats to begin with, so that doesn't help the situation. I'm thinking that probably makes it a little bit worse for me than somebody else, but I have gotten it, and I've gone to the doctor, and they told me, yep, you got cat scratch fever.
Wow.
So.
Well, the next time someone asks me if I know someone who has cat scratch, I'm going to now say yes. I'm like, yes, I met this guy who actually does get this, so. Wow. Well, I'm sorry that you don't get to enjoy the company of cats the way some of us do.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess they're also not for everyone.
No, they're not. But it's still fun. I still love cats no matter what. I mean, I love all animals, so it's cool. I just know that I have a little bit of an issue with them, and that's all right. You know, they leave me alone. I leave them alone. But they do try. They don't leave me alone. They do try to come up and snuggle all the time. And, you know, I think they know that I'm allergic to them, and that's why they want me to touch them, because they want me to get over it. But
they're evil.
They are evil.
They can be really mean.
So after this movie, you wrote the movie, and it came out on Lifetime. Did it come out exactly the way that you wanted it? What were some of the improvisations that came along the way that may have differed from your script? And how happy were you with the end result?
Yeah, it was, you know, this one was a tough one. We went through a lot of drafts of this, and at one point, Lifetime was like, well, basically the hardest thing about it was that people really couldn't agree, the powers that be couldn't agree on the tone of it. And so my first draft was very funny. It was very dark comedy, making fun of itself, making fun of Lifetime movies, making fun of zombie movies with a lot of little homages to old zombie movies and stuff. And that was not what they wanted. And so we got the note, we want this to be more like the typical 17 movie, except that she's just a zombie going through what typical 17-year-olds do. And in all these 17 movies, they're usually, you know, they get involved in some sort of a crime. So they, in this one, she witnesses a murder. Well, she overhears someone kind of not really confessing to a murder, but sort of confessing to a motive for a murder. So that's sort of what we added, and we just made it a 17 movie, mm-hmm. and you could have taken the zombieism out and still had a movie about a girl who, you know, is targeted because she knows too much about a murder than she should, but we added all the zombie stuff to it. So it kind of became this this sort of mixture of two types of movies. You know, it's funny. My preference was the first, the dark comedy, because that's what I liked more. And I thought we could maybe go more out of the box than what we actually did. But I have to say, the morning after it aired, a girl that went to my high school actually messaged me on Facebook and said, "We loved the movie. Thank you so much for writing a family-friendly horror movie for Halloween." And I hadn't really thought of it that way. I hadn't really thought of the fact that everything that comes on for Halloween is either an R-rated horror movie, mm-hmm. or it's a cartoon for kids. And there isn't a lot of family-friendly kind of spooky stuff. And so this fell into that. And so I'm glad it hit the mark that it was supposed to hit. It's just not what I initially envisioned it to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting because, you know, I love how things can change, but yet, even though things don't always come out the way that you see it, sometimes it doesn't make that necessarily a bad thing. And, you know, I really enjoyed the movie. I thought it was a great movie, and I had a lot of fun watching it. So,
right.
You know, it like you said, it wasn't exactly the way that you envisioned it, but it still came out really awesome, and that's cool.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, and some of the stuff that that I had put in the original draft that we kept, which I was glad, like the brain smoothies and that kind of stuff, that a lot of that did stay in it. When I had originally envisioned it, it was more sort of funny, and they played it very straight. So it had a little bit of a different tone. But, yeah, I'm glad you enjoyed it. And, we've gotten a pretty good response from people. So, you know, as long as people are happy and entertained by it, that's really our only goal.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was talking to Celeste, and we were kind of laughing about it, you know, how everybody self-diagnoses herself. Because I'm like, well, how did you figure out that this is a zombie? She goes, well, I think her character looks online and starts researching it online and stuff yeah. like that. It becomes a zombie. I'm like, oh, that dang WebMD. You know?
That's so true. And no matter what you look up on WebMD, by the way, it's either like, oh, it's like nothing. You're like, oh, it'll go away on its own. Or it's like, or you're going to die in like 2 weeks. Like, the range is so huge that, like, you have no idea if you're really sick or you're not.
That's right. That's why it's not good to do that. But in this case, it worked out because he was right. So, you know, that. But, you know, the story does have that system where, you know, people are dealing with something like this all the time, you know, and sometimes they don't have the answers and the doctor doesn't know the answers. So they do pick it up themselves. And sometimes they are very accurate on what they've been able to diagnose themselves with. So you can kind of put yourself in the position of where she's at and realizes, or Tia's at, and see that, you know, this could happen in real life. This happens to real people. And it is sometimes extremely tragic and nerve-wracking.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think her inclination to start writing down her symptoms, you know, in like a journal and try to track and figure this out, like approach it from a very systematic way, to me just made her smart and determined. And that's the kind of character that we wanted to create with Tia, because she's going to try to figure this out. And she hits a wall until she meets Flynn, who can basically introduce her to, you know, Steven, and they start to get some answers that way. But, yeah, I think that there's, in all those 17 movies, we try to infuse a lot of messages. Like, a lot of them are about bullying or just understanding other people or feeling different as a teenager, and that kind of thing. So, or, you know, even, like, trying to tell your mom this, like, that was part of this movie, too, was that, you know, she doesn't want to tell her mom. The backstory is, you know, she had an older sister who was killed in a hit and run, and the mom, ever since then, has been very overprotective of her, and so she doesn't want to tell her mom this because her mom's going to freak out. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a lot of things teenagers don't want to tell their mom. And so ultimately she does have to tell her, and she finds out that her mom becomes her biggest ally by doing that. So it's about communicating with your parents and all those kind of things. So we try to bring in all those sort of teenage elements to these movies too.
Mm-hmm. Now you have a couple more things in the works, which I'm really excited to hear about. So tell me, what are you writing? What are we going to be seeing or possibly seeing on television or the silver screen, maybe, if I, you know, get bold?
Well, right now, nothing for the silver screen right now. I'm working on a Lifetime movie that I'm finishing, and I'm actually now developing with some writers some new movies. So I'm basically helping them, I'm shepherding the project and helping them put the stories together and all that, and then they go away and write them. And then I'm also working on another Hallmark movie for right now, and then I'm attached to direct a couple for Lifetime coming up, one before the end of the year and then two more next year.
Well, that's really exciting. And what do you hope that people take away from watching your shows that you put out so far? And shows that you want to bring out? Do you want to tell messages? Do you want to tell a story? Do you want entertainment? Do you want all of it?
Yeah, I think that, you know, initially I just wanted to, like, entertain people. And, you know, I hope that you take, I try to put messages in there that make people think. And, you know, not just to tell people how they should feel one way or another about anything, but just to help people see things from a perspective that they may not always have seen on their own. And I think that that's one of the things that movies can do, whether it's entertaining or it's documentary or whatever kind of movie it is. It's basically opening a world to you about someone who may be very different than you. And so if that just kind of helps bring people together and helps you understand people a little bit better, or at least acknowledge that maybe not everyone thinks like you, I think that does a lot of good in the world. More recently, I've kind of just been doing not so many thrillers and doing more of the rom-coms, which are kind of fun. They're more family-friendly, and I have a Christmas movie called 12 Days of Giving that premiered last year at Christmas time on Up, and it's re-airing. It's starting to re-air starting November 18th, and it's got, like, a great message, and I was so happy when people started, after it aired the first time, people would email me and say, man, I've seen this movie like 5 times and I cry every time and I love it and I want to know when the DVD is coming out. And I mean, people were just really responding well to that, and it has such a good lighthearted message. But I think that, you know, we're in a time right now where I think we need a lot of that kind of stuff in the world. So, that's sort of what I want to be focusing on more in the next year or two.
You know, before we go, I do have one last question for you, and this is kind of about television in general. You know, when I grew up, we had shows like Full House and, you know, Family Matters and you know, Cheers and all these other things. You know, they all still had a fun, laughing, you know, entertainment value, but they still always seemed to teach some type of a lesson in the end. And I think we've gotten away from that so much, and I think our kids would benefit from that, but it's like we're just kind of putting stuff out there, and some of the stuff is just, you know, offbeat comedy, and it doesn't, I mean, it's got a great entertainment value, but it doesn't have some of that stuff that we had growing up. What's your take on that? Have we gotten away from that, and do we need to bring it back a little bit?
I think it's still out there. I think you have to look for it more than you used to. I mean, all the shows you mentioned, I grew up with also, and, you know, there was always, I mean, our detective shows were like Simon and Simon, right, mm-hmm. and Magnum P.I., and they weren't CSI Miami, and they weren't so violent, and they weren't so gritty, and they weren't so procedural. They were about, you know, characters and people and, you know, the dichotomy between those people. And so I think shows like Blackish, you know, I think that teaches a message every week. So I think there's a lot that you can learn, and there's still really good television out there. I think the difference now is that there are so many outlets, and there's just so much content that's needed that it's certainly not as competitive as it used to be to create content, because there's a million channels now, and we just didn't have that many. And so they're all buying television shows and TV movies and everything. And so you can sell a lot more now than you used to be able to. So I think the bar is just a little bit lower than it used to be. But at the same time, you know, the people that are creating it, just all they have to do is want to have a message, mm-hmm. and you can put that in. And so it really comes down to just the writers saying, you know, this is the kind of thing that we want to write and produce. And then also the distributors deciding that, you know, that kind of high-value television is worth distributing.
Mm-hmm. Well, Christine, this has been so much fun, and I love, you know, getting inside the minds of people that make our shows that we love, and, you know, this has been such a privilege to be able to do that with you and seeing some of the movies that I've liked and watched on television, and I hope to be able to see a lot more, so I'm hoping you're going to continue to write and keep making some great stuff. But in the meantime, how can people follow you, find you, contact you, or anything else that you want to put out there?
Yeah, so you can, the best way to contact me is through Facebook, actually, and you can find me at Facebook, screenwriter Christine Conrad, and I'm also on Twitter at C Conrad, and you can come to my website at ChristineConrad.com, and Conrad is C-O-N-R-A-D-T. There's like an extra T at the end of my name. So that's how you find me, and I do, when people message and ask questions and that kind of thing, I do my best to try to respond and get back to them, so I am usually pretty reachable.
Well, Christine, next time you have a new show coming out, let's get you back on, because I do want to talk to you about those and bring that extra perspective to these shows, which I think it brings a depth to the show when you're watching it. You get to hear all the different characters and the people that write it and directed it, and I think that just brings a very special element because you get to see all the different perspectives. So I would love to have you back on again, and thank you for taking some time out and talking to me about what you love the most, and I appreciate that, and hopefully you'll inspire people to do the same thing and follow their dreams.
I hope so, too. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. All right, guys, we are going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we have more. I guarantee you, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this.
Do you love horror? The strange and unusual. Fantasy creatures or urban legends? Do you want to step inside a dream or nightmare? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then you should check out internationally exhibiting artist Jason Dowd and his award-winning photographic collections by visiting www.imaginationartstudios.com. Get inside his mind and experience his inner weird.
Andrea Tanteros here from the Fox News Channel. I've got a new book out, Tied Up in Knots, How Getting What We Wanted Made Women Miserable, also known as the modern day Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. Go ahead and pick it up at your local bookstore now. It's already a bestseller, or you can get it off Amazon.com or HarperCollins.com.
Hi, I'm Andy Allo, and you're listening to the AME Radio Show.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We have on the line with us a special guest. His name is Jeff Allen. He is a legend in the comedy industry, and we're going to be talking to him about a lot of cool stuff, because you know what? We all like to laugh, and sometimes life just gets us down, you know, and there's nothing more satisfying than laughter in times that are tough. So welcome to the show, Jeff. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I had my physical, and doctor told me if I was part of a wildebeest herd, the lions would be circling me, so... Apparently, I'm not in as good a shape as I thought.
Oh, no.
He asked me if I did anything aerobically. I said, well, I don't know. Let me look the word up. I'll give you a call back.
I know that.
My wife and I got into an argument about whether or not I move. And anyway, she bought me a Fitbit for no other reason than to show me how little I move. So anyway.
Was she right?
Apparently, well, I guess, I don't know, but what bothers me more than anything is Fitbit. They send me text messages and things, and they seem to monitor my life. At one point, they tell me how many times I get up in the middle of the night. I didn't know that they monitor my sleep habits, and they said something like, you got up five times? Are you restless? You know, well, Brad and Angelina are splitting up. Who can sleep, man? You know, it's a lot of pressure.
So that's actually more invasive than the Alexa.
Absolutely. I said to my wife, apparently we weren't giving up enough of our privacy to Apple, Google, and the government. I mean, you know,
know, what could be wrong with a corporation monitoring our sleep? I mean, I'm watching Golf Channel at 10 in the morning. 2 in the afternoon, they send me a text message. Are you dead? You've taken 78 steps in 4 hours. And most of that's because my foot fell asleep and I was banging it on the floor. So.
Wow. So let's kind of learn a little bit about you, because I do need comedy today. You know, today was just the type of day where even the devil sat back and looked at me and said, "Damn, I think I overdid it with him."
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I know.
We need some comedy in our lives, and today it just happened that today was the day that you're coming on, and this is going to make me laugh, and I love that. But let's learn a little bit about you first before we start making people laugh. What got you into comedy? What made it special for you that made you want to pursue this as a career?
Well, it's interesting. My brother was a musician, so he was 5 years older than me. So I remember he was playing a club once, and they had some comedians go up and open for him. And I remember saying to him after that, I go, "Gosh, I would love to be able to do that." And I had no clue. It was, you know, the 70s of where do you even do comedy? And then I was working for a jewelry company out of high school as a 19-year-old, and someone told me about a comedy club in Chicago, around the corner from where we were doing a jewelry show. I worked for a jewelry company. And anyway, I went in and I got hooked. And I was really blessed to be in the right place at the right time. So 1978 is when I started, and then the comedy club exploded in 1980. So I was able to hit the road, and I literally traveled 48 to 50 weeks a year doing comedy at comedy clubs.
Wow.
So it was a great learning experience. You know, you get paid a few bucks, and you know, you get to be bad.
Right. That's right.
So it was good.
Now, there's so many different styles of comedy out there. Do you have one in particular that you like, that you fell in love with, or have you tried them all? And which one do you like the best so far?
Well, I was I've always been like, you know, Cosby Carlin type, you know, a storyteller. I've always thought that the best stuff that made me laugh, there was a hint of truth to it. You know, you understand people embellish, but you take something that's true, and then you just kind of look at it from a different point of view, you know. And I was a big Cosby fan growing up, and then as I got older, I got into George Carlin, mm-hmm. and Richard Pryor was, you know, and but I ended up, the only thing that seemed to work for me was working clean, and I tried not working clean, and it just didn't work for me. So, you know, Shakespeare said to thine own self be true. So,
yeah,
that's what I ended up with, telling stories. Someone asked me, you know, what I did before I got married. I said, I starved. I didn't really have much to talk about.
So what was it like getting out on the stage the first time? I know it's intimidating, but, you know, you got to try to make people laugh on top of it. So what was your first experience like?
It was awful. I went out, I couldn't see anything. I didn't realize that the lights blinded you. So I think my first line ever uttered on stage was, "Holy, you know, I can't see a thing." And I was, inebriated, and I didn't really have much to say. I didn't know that you actually made notes and had prepared. I thought comics just went up and kind of talked about their day, and people found it funny. So I didn't really prepare anything, and I found out that first night it really helps to have something prepared. So, and I came back Sunday night. That was Thursday night. Open mic night was Thursday, so Sunday was another open mic night, and I came back, and the MC came over to me and he said, "You're going to have to make some sense tonight. We're still trying to figure out what you said Thursday." So, and it went that way for quite a while. I couldn't do more than 3-4 minutes. The MCs never could leave the room while I was on stage because they didn't know how long I was going to do.
Wow.
Because I draw a blank, and from the stage fright, you know, and my wife said to me, "What made you keep going back?" I said, "Well, I was either a sadist or a masochist because people were getting punished. I don't know who was getting more, me or them, but I knew if I got past the fear that I could be funny. I mean, I really did, and I just really wanted to do it, you know, and,
sure.
And then let it go. Where, you know, I had a club owner after 2 years tell me, "You'll never make a living as a comedian." So, And I said, thanks, man. He goes, oh, you're welcome. I said, you know, anybody who's ever made anything of their life has had some jerk in their life tell them they can't do it.
That's so, right.
You're my jerk. You're my jerk. And I'll tell that story for the rest of my life.
See, I've always kind of wanted to try comedy myself because I like making people laugh. But I'm the type of guy, you get up on the stage and I would just pick on everybody. Bam, 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 bam. And then when I was done, everybody else would be laughing at that person. And then that person would be laughing at everybody else. But by that time, I'd have to escape out the back door because I'd probably be killed outside of the parking lot. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I found that when I talked to, I don't really talk to the audience. There was a period where I thought, you know, I'd pick on hecklers and things.
Mm-hmm.
And I got so good at that I couldn't follow it with any material. People wanted you, and then I almost got beat up twice in like 1 month. I had some guy, two different guys waiting for me in the parking lot, wanted to beat me up. And I said to a friend of mine, I go, I'm just not that motivated to fight, you know?
Right.
So they seem to be a heck of a lot more motivated than me. And I said, it really isn't worth it. And I knew a guy in New York that was standing at the urinal after a show, picking on somebody, and the guy came in the bathroom and just, without warning, smashed his face against the wall.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, you just don't know where the line is and who and what frame of mind, whoever it is you decide you want to pick on, is in it, you know? So I can imagine it's probably even worse today.
Oh, I'm sure, because everybody gets hurt done over
ago,
little things.
So. Yeah, exactly. So I just feel that I learned to talk and write my own stuff, and I don't, you know, it's a show.
Sure.
So just come along on the journey with me, and we'll all have a good time.
So let's kind of do one more serious thing before we get into some funny stuff here. Tell us about the Make Comedy Great Again tour.
Oh, man, it's a blast. It was funny. When the producers reached out a month ago to my management, they said, we'd like to have Jeff part of this thing, Make Comedy Great Again. And I go, I'm not doing politics, man. You know, the world's got enough of that. I'm just tired of it. My wife and I just shut it all off about 2 years ago, two and a half years ago. I remember looking at her. I remember specifically watching something. We were steeped, neck deep, like a lot of Americans, in politics.
Mm-hmm.
And we're watching something, and two people are just ripping each other apart. And I paused the TV, and I looked at her, and I said, you know, in all these years that we've watched this stuff, have you ever heard one person, one, look at the other one and go, you know, I never really looked at it that way? And the truth is no, because they're not paid to look at it any other way, and they're just paid to just go at it, and like attorneys, you know, attorneys are taught to learn both sides of an argument. And our family was getting at each other. You know, we couldn't talk about certain things at the dinner tables, and we started making lists of things that are off topics. And I mean, how ridiculous is that? So we decided we would become Kardashian Americans. We would just study People magazine and see what the celebrities are doing. And not care. And then 1 year we started watching Bachelorette, and I ended up yelling at the TV by the end of the series. And my wife looks at me, she goes, it's not politics, it's you. You just can't, you know, accept people that disagree with you, you know. So anyway, when they came to me with Make Comedy Great Again, I said, I don't want to do politics. And they said, it's not about that. It's politics free. We just want the clean, funny guys that can bring we want to draw three generations out for a night of laughter, you know, the grandparents, the parents, the kids, and just sit and then be able to get in the car and go home and not have to worry about arguing about something they heard on the stage or you know. And the four of us probably have over 100 years of comedy experience. We all came out of nightclubs and casinos and stuff, but we work clean, and it's a great, and we're diverse in what we do. Nobody talks, you know, I do a lot of marriage and stuff, and Ross talks about, you know, being, you know, raised in Jersey, and Tina. I used to work with Tina in Las Vegas when we would do the clubs out there. So it's fun, and the response we're getting is amazing. Now we're going to Tarrytown this weekend and Albany, and we were in New Haven and Eastern Pennsylvania last week, and Long Island, and everybody coming off is just going, wow, we never thought you could do it, man. We never thought you could pull it off, man, clean and no politics.
Well, that's cool. And I know a lot of those cities because I was born and raised in Bristol, Connecticut, and I know New Haven very well. I know Tarrytown very well, and I know those areas. So it's kind of fun that you're in those areas and places I actually know. It's not like, oh yeah, I know where that is, and I actually know where these are.
Yeah, it's funny because I've never worked much in the Northeast, I lived up there. I did a lot of work in Boston. I lived in Boston and New Jersey, but I haven't been out there since the '90s, It's fun. I love the area. I love the attitude. You could get as sarcastic as you want and they love it, So,
sure.
But it's just stay away from, those hot button things. We're really divided.
Yeah, we are. So I guess let's get.
And I also want to say, between 10 and 15,000 Facebook followers. And all these years, not one of the 15,000 has ever asked my opinion about anything.
Wow.
So as my wife says, that should tell you all you need to know. Nobody cares what you have to say.
That's right. Wow, that's awesome. I mean, because I have people constantly talking about politics. In fact, I'm so burnt out with it, I don't even want to hear it anymore. I don't care what side
it
is.
Well, that's it, man. That's all we want is to take a weekend off, man. Come on out, see the show, laugh, and then go get back on the horse Monday and start hating things together,
Well, I think it's about time to have some fun making people laugh here real quick. So we got about 10 minutes left, and I think that's worth it. So I guess let's start off by saying you talk about raising your two boys. What was it like when you were on the road all the time?
Well, what's interesting is the fact that I talk about them, and then they would argue about who I was talking about. And one of the classic stories was they both went to camp, and I talked about my son was 12 or 13, and my wife says to him, go pack for camp for the week. He literally is in his room for less than 5 minutes for a week, right? He's going to pack. He leaves. So anyway, we go walking in. And in his suitcase, he's got like a pair of underwear, a pair of swim trunks, shorts, and then the rest of it's just video games. So Tammy says he'll never check. So she takes everything out, puts in 7 pair of underwear, 5 pairs of shorts, 2 or 3 pairs of swim trunks, shirts, just packs them for a week, toiletries and stuff. Anyway, we pick him up a week later, and no lie, we counted. He had 6 clean pair of underwear. Yeah, everything was still folded in. He just literally wore the same clothes for an entire week. And he looked like you're covered in poison ivy, rashes everywhere, hair matted down. He didn't bathe, And he starts to get in my car and said, "You ain't getting anywhere near my car, pal. We're strapping you on the roof like a dead deer. We're taking you through the car wash." "Nowhere near me, putty boy," I said, "Did you even bathe once?" He goes, "We swam every day." And I go,
"Oh, good, amoebas and stuff on you."
Right. That should frighten every parent who sends a kid to camp. This is what they could do. Can you imagine the swimming pool? What diseases were floating around that thing? 75 adolescent boys just, So anyway, they would argue about who I was talking about. The boys, they would go, "That was about you." "No, that was about you. That was about you." I said, "It was about both of you, you pigs." His first girlfriend, he just started brushing his teeth and taking showers and stuff. And I called her. I called her out of the house. I gave her $100. I said, "Thanks, man. You got my kid bathing and changing clothes. Something we were never able to do. So thank you."
Wow. That's funny. And all kids are like that too. I mean, typical boys. Even when we go on trips, anything that we can carry in a little carry-on bag and put up in the top, we're good with that. We can make that last for a month.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
My wife goes through my luggage about every third trip. She goes, "Where are you going? How many days?" I go, "Get away from my, get away. Don't touch it. I'm tired of lugging this stuff through the airport."
Wow. Now
I don't get paid. I'm not a clothes horse,
So how old are your boys, and are they millennials?
Well, it's funny. I think they're Gen X, but they work with millennials, and it's starting to rub off on them. That's what I've noticed. We can't get them here on time anymore. My youngest son, he lives in my house, a house I own. I haven't got a dime rent in over a year now. And my wife says, well, what are you going to do? And I go, well, he's got our grandchildren. I said, I'd like to throw him out. And then keep his wife and kids under the roof, man. I said, I'm so ticked off.
Wow.
And, I don't know what to do about it. I really don't. So, anyway, anybody listening, send it to me, jeffallencomedy.com. I can pull the plug, but, you know, my best friend told me once, he said his dad came, he was living with him when he was 25. Now, in my day, back, you know, I'm 62, it was understood at 18, you got out, unless you were in college. If you weren't going to school, you were out on your own. So I was out at 18. I didn't go to college, so I was out on my own, you know, and my buddy was at his house until he was 26, and one day he comes home, and his dad goes, hey, I want to show you something. They put him in his car. His mom and dad drove him to an apartment, and they opened the door, and he goes, what's this? He goes, this is your new house, and he said, your mom and I have paid the first and last month. You're on your own. Bye. And they left him in the house, and he said, you know, for about 2 days, I was just so ticked off at him, and then I realized, hey, this is my place, man. I can do whatever I want, you know? And he went out, he got a job, and anyway, he's been on his own since. So I've thought about it, but then it's moving the wife and the two kids, the grandbabies, and it's, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, we'll have a come-to-Jesus moment at some point. I did tell him at some point somebody will come over and go, hi, I'm the new owner. Your dad sold the house. So.
My mom's been saying the same thing, too. Not to me, though. I have my own place, but yes. That's funny. So what are the other things that you got coming up here in the next couple of weeks in here? What other places are you going to be going to, and what kind of surprises do you have in store for people?
Well, I know I'm in Tarrytown, and then I think I do some corporate shows after that on the 6th and 8th. And then I do churches, and, coming up, I know next year I'm doing the Dry Bar Comedy Special, and we're taping one of those. And I think they're taping this weekend in Tarrytown for on Friday night for CRTV. So I don't know what they're going to do with that. We just agreed that we'd let them tape us. So, hopefully that'll, you know, get the word out. And that's basically what we're pushing for this Make Comedy Great Again. I know he's got a bunch of requests for dates next for 2019. Mm-hmm. And, I'm trying to think. Corporate stuff, probably. People can go to the website, jeffallencomedy.com, and my calendar's up there.
And you got some cool stuff in your store here. I see that you have a new fall bundle. Tell us a little bit about that.
That's just all the DVDs, a DVD, a book, and three CDs that I've recorded. And there's a special price on that. Yeah, I did the Happy Wife, Happy Life video a while ago. And, I don't know. Most people, we just send them to Pandora, you know. It's free there. So. Yeah, I'm a heck of a salesman. Yeah. I remember 1 year ago, I had a job selling cars, and after a month, I didn't sell one car, and the sales manager calls me in. He goes, you didn't sell a car. I actually said this to him. I don't think they want one, you know. And he says, I'll tell you what, Jeff, why don't you go home and sit by the phone, and I'll call you when we get a customer who actually wants a car. I'll say. and that was 40 years ago. I think he lied to me. I'm still waiting for the call.
Love that.
I think he fired me. Yeah.
Wow. Well, Jeff, this has been so much fun. I'm glad you came on. You brightened my day up, and everybody else loves comedy too. So hopefully they'll check you out and maybe show up to a show. That I'm sure that would be awesome, and you'll probably sign some autographs and stuff afterwards too.
Yeah, we love meeting the people, and that's what's the fun part is having them come out. You know, and again, you see some people who came in with burdens and are leaving with less of a burden. And, and laughter is, man. You know that. I mean, that it's documented medical. The endorphins that it releases, and there's a healing benefit to laughter. And And we certainly need it as a nation anymore. Just it's great that you can sit together and just laugh together and set aside whatever differences you have for a couple hours. So
that's right.
That's the goal.
That's right. Well, Jeff, thank you for coming on. And once again, this has been so much fun. I'll have to get you back on after you've done a couple more tours here or places, and we'll see where you we'll catch up with you.
Sounds good, man. I appreciate it.
No problem. All right, guys, we got a quick commercial break coming up. I hate to do it, but we got to pay the bills, so we'll be right back after this.
Jason Dowd of Imagination Art Studios is proud to announce the release of his steampunk collection, which is currently on tour across the country. There you will see beautiful handmade masks from Venice, Italy, that accentuate beautiful women to create amazing stories and feelings to those who visit the collection. Each photo series has a theme, mask, authentic props, and beautifully elaborate outfits, all collaborated in the mind of Jason Dowd to create the right emotion and feeling. The masks come from a shop at Epcot at the Italian Pavilion, where all these photos are on display for you to see. This is one of the biggest accomplishments of his career, having his work at Disney. Come see the beautiful first release of the series, which includes Distressed Dancer, Spanish Serenade, The Pied Piper, and Reaching for the Czars. You can see them in person or online at www.imaginationartstudios.com. For more information, visit the website. Again, it's imaginationartstudios.com. Our Facebook is Imagination Art Studios. Twitter is @DowStudios. And Instagram is @JasonDow. Come and be mesmerized by the masks and the stories behind them.
Hi there, this is Kim Coles, and you can find my newest book, Open Your Gifts, at openyourgiftbook.com. That's www.openyourgiftbook.com. I hope you'll pick up a copy. Would love to have you read it. Bye.
Hi, this is Jamie Linner. You remember me from Melrose Place? I listen to AME Radio Show.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the show. Unfortunately, we got just a few minutes left, but before I go, I do want to continue on the tradition that I have right now, which is not looking that far in advance for Christmas. And since Halloween is in our rearview mirror right now, I want to talk about Thanksgiving and talk about some things that make me extremely thankful. And I want you to do the same thing, too. I want to know what you're thankful for. So get on our Twitter, get on our Facebook, whatever it may be, and tell me what you're most thankful for. Now, for me, I'm very thankful for the people that have helped me make this show a reality. And that's not only our guests, but the people behind the scenes. You would not believe how many people it takes to make this radio show work. We have the radio stations, which I'm extremely thankful for, which is AM, FM 247, Radio Love, iHeart, Spotify, Phoenix Broadcasting, WKLAP, and more. But I'm also thankful for the PR people that have helped me bring such amazing guests to the forefront to get their message out to you. You know, just because that they're an established celebrity that everybody knows of, or if they're just somebody that's just, you know, like a band that just moved out from their garage and they're starting to take on the world, their story of passion is extremely important for you to hear, because they've walked the walk and they've been able to share with you some of the things that makes them passionate about what they do, but also their story can inspire you to do the same thing. And not only that, you know, with art, it's got to be in front of people to be loved, right? So it doesn't matter how much of a household name you have or not, we're getting their newest stuff out in front of you so you can go and enjoy it, right? You know, that's what I love about art. It can take you away from things, you know, whether it's a television show or music, or it can transport you into a better thing. And sometimes when you come home after having a really bad day, that one song can just change your whole outlook, right? So that's what I'm thankful for. I mean, we've had some amazing guests, and I've had such an amazing opportunity over these last 5 years bringing you what I love to do every week, and that's talk about art, music, and entertainment. And I've been able to talk to some people I have just adored watching or listening to on the radio or television for my entire life. So I cannot thank everybody enough. In fact, I wish I could call out all the names, but I can't. There's just too big of a list right now. But you know who you are. So if you're listening and if you've ever been a guest on our show, I guarantee you I am extremely thankful for you and everything else that you have brought to this show, which has helped make it such an amazing success. Okay, so I'm about ready to close it out now. Unfortunately, we've got about a minute left. And if you want to see us, we're on every week, twice a week. We're on Friday and Saturday. Depending on the channel that you hear us on, it may be different times or what have you. So just remember, two guests per show each week. So we have four guests per week. You don't want to miss any of them. You can find us on AMFM247.com and on their 11 AMFM stations across the United States every Friday morning at 6 a.m. Eastern Standard Time and every Saturday night at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can also find us on WKLAP.com every Friday at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Every Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on WKLAP on RadioLove.com. iHeart, Spotify, iTunes, and PhoenixBroadcasting.com is all on demand, so go check it out there. And we will see you again tomorrow afternoon, and keep those creative juices flowing. Good night, everybody.
That's the end? We're done. Calm down, people. Calm down. Okay? That's it.